Triple M Footy lives on Listener. Thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
My name's Tony Squires. I'm joined by Ryan Girdler, Brent Reed, and Ben Teo with us. Benny, g'day.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me back.
Hey, congratulations on your sideline TV debut the other night.
Thank you, yeah. It was a stinker of a game on Thursday, but great opportunity to call some more footy and get close to the action.
You didn't like the game on Thursday night?
Oh, it was terrible.
Really?
Yeah. Well, okay. The first half was terrible. I think there was maybe 12 errors in the first half, so this is a joke. Yeah,
you, right. Well, from the sideline, you could have let them know that in the run of play. You know, yell out, this is hopeless. Did you get involved?
Just wanted them to get to halftime and JD to talk some sense into them.
It was worth watching it just for Benny's dulcet tones on the sideline.
He's good.
It's very good.
You're
very
coming good. From another sideline.
Well, a veteran sideline. Yeah. Hey, can I give a quick shout-out? Can I give a quick shout-out to my niece? She's making her rugby league debut today for Wynnum in Brisbane. Ellie Hawkins.
Oh, nice.
Under 13. So I want to give her a shout-out.
Good luck.
Oh, well done. Hey,
she's playing now as we speak. Any tips?
Any tips for Benny?
When in doubt, just make it up, Benny.
Done.
No, he doesn't need my help, please. He's played a few more games than me in the NRL, just a couple. Mm.
Did you get your dial on camera at all there, Benny?
Yeah, I did. We did a live cross, myself and Corey Parker out the front, so it was a bit different, you know, putting on a suit and getting the tie done.
Yeah. Whereas here, you don't even have to wear pants.
Nothing. I'm not wearing any right now.
They're always entertaining, those stand-ups that Corey does from outside the stadium, particularly after the game. Well, normally gets swamped by punters.
Absolutely.
The umbrella tip's a very good tip, though, Gerds. Well done.
Yeah. Or poncho.
I always forget my umbrella. Mm. It's a good tip, Benny. Always take an umbrella, buddy.
Did you leave it in Vegas? Because you were best on ground, weren't you?
It was inside the... It had a roof in Vegas, Tony. It didn't need an umbrella. I did my best over there. A lot of hard work.
I know, as you do on this show as well. And I'll set that task for you right now. What's happened in terms of anything going to the judiciary? There were a couple of things that looked a little bit dodgy.
Yeah, look, the big news out of last night is Britton Nakora, the Sharks back rower. He won a report for I think it's called a careless high tackle. It was almost a half-pie shoulder charge on Viliami Kikau.
Exocet missile.
He's looking at 2 to 3 games for that shot, so it's hard to argue. I expect he'll take the early guilty plea and cop the 2 matches. Jerome Luai got a couple of charges out of last night as well for a shot on Bailey Simonson, forced Bailey off for a HIA, didn't come back, and tripping on Mitchell Moses. Look, he's just going to cop fines, Jerome, so I imagine he'll cop the fines and move on. And Morgan Harper got charged for dangerous contact again, just a fine. So the big one's Britton Nakora, a couple of games at least for him. And probably well deserved given that shot. It was pretty ordinary stuff.
Absolutely. I may have missed it, but did Viliami Kikau go off for an HIA?
No.
I mean, when you're hit by somebody who is sent to the bin for the power of the hit, you would imagine that they'd have a look at you.
No, he didn't. He actually went up for a HIA later in the game. Just before half time, he went up for a HIA, but he didn't go off for a HIA for the Nakora shot. So that's a bit of a mystery.
Wow. Fijians, eh? They're built different.
Look, that one, so 2 weeks.
2 to 3.
2 to 3 weeks.
2 with an early guilty plea. I mean, he'll cop the early guilty, I imagine. It's hard to fight that one.
Yeah. Jerome Luai, also the notion if you hit somebody and that was quite early in the game, Bailey Simonson doesn't return, it's, you know, obviously they can't retrospectively say, well, that, you know, maybe you should have got 10 in the bin as well, I guess. Anyway, we're going to look at all those things. There's so much to get involved with across the 3 hours this afternoon. I should give you those scores, though, if you don't know them already. The Broncos in that game that Benny Teo described so wonderfully, 28-18 winners over the South. So it was the Panthers in that Battle of the West, 26-18 over the Eels. And, of course, the Sharks beating the Bulldogs 25-6. We'll get to all those things very shortly. Can I just say that, look, I love, when we're talking about sideline eyes and commentary, I do love Cooper Cronk in commentary. Brilliant analysis, as we know. I just think there should be a drinking game. You toss one back every time he says after a kick he's put that on an absolute dime. You'll be staggering by halftime.
Really?
Especially if Penrith are playing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was interesting, though, in the interview on the sideline. We've got two sideline eyes right here. They didn't do this interview with Latrell Mitchell. Dobbo from Very Own Triple M is where it appeared after the coverage of the game, being interviewed sideline. Let's just have a listen to the fruity language of Latrell Mitchell.
It's all right, mate. Look, honestly, in the first bit, just a hard game. We showed what we were about, and good on that. I don't care if I'm swearing, boys, honestly. But I'm very happy. Scored 100 tries.
Well done.
Yeah, everyone. But anyways.
Right, well, you be. Thanks,
joking,
mate.
All right.
Well, apart from the F-bomb festival, the idea that no apologies for swearing. What did you make of it? I mean, is that just naturally what happens? Although, is it Latrell Mitchell is a professional rugby league player who has had a microphone stuck in his face year after year, game after game, and probably knows what's expected of him. Were we offended, concerned, or think that maybe Latrell is just changing the whole narrative where we are allowed to swear on TV, on radio, because it's happening everywhere else in society? Ben?
He always talks about being a role model, doesn't he? And I think it's important that he probably holds himself to a little bit higher standard there. We all understand that sometimes we're caught up in emotion and sometimes we swear, and there's a fair bit of swearing that goes on the footy field. But once you leave and you're doing an interview, whether that be on TV or radio, I think it's important there that you step into your professional role, who you're representing from a club point of view and sponsors. It's just part and parcel goods. You agree with being a professional athlete?
Yeah, I was in that interview, Tone. I was up in the box for that one. And it just felt unnecessary to me. You know, the media are stakeholders in our game. Also, I was thinking at the time, like, if my two little girls were in the car and we're listening to this after, you know, watching the game, which a lot of people were, there was 35,000 people at Suncorp Stadium. The first thing they do when they obviously get in the car is they want to hear the wrap-up on the radio. And if my two little kids, after watching their heroes play, have to go through that and ask me questions about it, it puts parents in an uncomfortable situation. So,
yeah, and we should point out that obviously we put the bleeps in then, live to air.
Yeah, live that went to air, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it was just unnecessary language, and I think Latrell's better than that. He is a leader in our game, and I think someone needs to pull him into line over that.
Well, somebody certainly tried to, none other than Maroon from this station, who is, as we know, an avid Rabbitohs fan. Now, what he had 24 hours to think about what he had heard, and this is what Maroon had to say.
I've been a South member for decades and decades. I don't remember when I wasn't. South to me is everything, and Latrell Mitchell's behaviour last night, mate, if you happen to be listening, you are an absolute disgrace. You are an embarrassment to our jumper and the tradition and the people it represents. For you to get on air, on Triple M, live on air, and drop the F-bomb half a dozen times and then give yourself credit for scoring 100 tries, I mean, honestly, I cannot fathom what is going on in your head. And if any of the hierarchy at our club is listening, for God's sake, pull this bloke into line.
Now, Maroon had, as we said, he'd had plenty of time to think about it, yet there's clearly still emotion involved. So if you take that emotion up, maybe that is a little strong, but what did you think of it, Reedy?
Look, I get accused of being a bit of a Latrell cheerleader, I was talking to you off air, Tone. What I found really difficult with Latrell is to balance the good he does.
Yep.
And he does amazing things for the game. He does amazing things in the Indigenous community with the occasions where maybe some of the things he does aren't as kosher or aren't as probably acceptable. The good for me with Latrell, the good far outweighs the bad, and I understand. Look, I didn't particularly like what happened the other night. I don't think it was necessary, but I just think with Latrell that occasionally you're going to get these moments, and you have to accept them, because what he does for rugby league, what he does for South Sydney, what he does for the Indigenous community,
you don't
far
have to accept
outweighs
that sort of
everything.
Behaviour, Rudy.
Except that occasionally he is going to do things that some people
if
frown on.
If he doesn't
on.
Want to do an interview at the end of the game, all he needs to say is, no, Dobbo, no, yeah, I'm not,
then
I'm not good
him,
to go
then we'll
tonight.
Bag him for not doing interviews.
Well, I'd much rather be, you know, not having him there for an interview than having him come on and carry on that way. It was totally unnecessary, mate. We've all, Benny and I, we've both been, you know, in losing sides and been had headphones thrown on us at the end of games when you don't feel like speaking to anyone.
You've never dropped. And you've never dropped. Well,
never,
you,
mate.
Play,
and even if you do it once, you apologise because sometimes you are caught up in the moment, but you don't intentionally need to go on three or four times to make a point of swearing.
Yeah, and to say out loud, I'm not going to apologise for it. That was the interesting part for me, is if it was not deliberate, but once he dropped one, he thought, you know what, this is the path I'm going to go down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you got to take in consideration too, like the week and the build-up. He sort of had us back and forth with Anthony Mundine. There's been a fair few things going on at the moment. So I think sometimes that's where his attitude's at. Screw the world. I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to say what I want, but... as we said, you're a professional and sometimes you just got to toe the line.
To suggest he's a disgrace is a bit over the top, though. I mean, I know Maroon's passionate about South and loves the club, and he obviously didn't like what happened last night. But, I mean, Latrell's far from a disgrace. From it for South sitting in the game.
I absolutely agree. I mean, look, my 14-year-old, who is trouble, he comes up with language not dissimilar to that, and you know, I find it offensive as well. But it is out there.
It was unnecessary.
You can look every TV show you watch online. You know, it's that kind of language is out there. I wonder though if Latrell had been doing an interview to a TV station, would he have had a different attitude? Was he thinking, you know, Triple M rocks a footy? I think he'd be a bit loosey goosey here. I'd imagine it would have been a different scenario.
I think he would have.
Or maybe he will sit back and have a little think about that. What about the rest of the story with South Sydney? You've got Jack Whiten coming back. What do you think about where they are? 0-2, and as I said, the back end of last year, not particularly good as well. Benny, what have you made of them?
Yeah, I think they just need to shake things up. You know, with Jack Whiten coming back, I think there's an opportunity to maybe slot them in the halves. That's just my point of view. I think they really need some experience, but more so they just need some confidence in the halves. Just watching them the other night, I felt like they were a little bit lost. It felt like they hadn't practiced the, you know, downtown offside rule. It didn't look like they had practiced the blocker rule. They were just in all sorts. So it took them to get to halftime. I noticed that they were playing a lot sideways. They kind of need someone to just straighten it up, run the footy. They come out in the second half and they got nice and direct, scored two tries, bang, bang, and then fell back into those errors. So, I mean, it's not panic stations. I mean, we're in round two and I think they can definitely turn it around. But I would say there's players in that side maybe looking at their halves thinking, I'm not getting a lot of confidence out of this, and we need a change.
I feel a bit sorry for Lachlan Ilias also. Yeah. Every time you see him, and he makes a mistake, you can see his little cheeks redden, you know, like he's embarrassed. It's like somebody who wants to be accepted but doesn't expect to be. He does that feeling that he doesn't really, you know. He obviously has the skills.
It's a ruthless game, though. Yeah, you know, it's not one of those ones where it's like, oh, he's a nice kid, and I feel sorry for him, and I'd love him to go well. Unfortunately, when you get out there, and we all know this, it's crazy. It's full on. It's intense.
Especially, Benny, in the NRL, when you get limited opportunities. In South Sydney, you're going to be, you know, most people think they're going to play finals. They're going to be in those big games. There's going to be like the game against the Broncos, the game against the Panthers. They're going to be top billing when they play the Roosters. So, you know you're going to get limited chances in the halves on the back of limited momentum that you're going to have, and you just need to ice those opportunities. Yep. And that, I think that's the difference at the moment. For me, I thought defensively they were a lot better this week than they were last week. Like, even though the Broncos end up scoring 28 points or whatever it was, you know, there was resilience, there was energy and effort in that area where I just thought at the back end of last year and even over in Vegas there wasn't. You could see, like, Cody making a real effort defensively, coming out of the line, really trying to lead his troops, and you could see that their focus for the week had been more on defence than attack, to Benny's point, where they were probably just a little bit sloppy with the football. But, I also think that, you know, maybe Cody going into that seven role, you bring Jack Whiten in, maybe not next week. You know, they've got a big game. Who they play, the Roosters or something?
Roosters.
Maybe he's not ready for that yet, but definitely at some point, you know, I think the pressure is going to be on Lachlan because, you know, they are creating opportunities with, you know, some quick play, the balls from Cam Murray, with Damien Cook getting out from dummy half. But then all of a sudden there's a breakdown. You don't feel like when they come to that right edge, they're a threat. And that allows everyone to load up on the other edge where they are a threat. And I think they need to probably change that at some point.
All right, let's have a quick listen to what Coach Justin Dumitru had to say about that performance.
Oh, it's concentration. one generally leads to two, two leads to three because we're not concentrating, fatigue's getting in, and I think we're just, like I said, it's individuals have got to own their roles. There's just five, six, seven things that add to that. You know, that's, you know, like I said, we've locked them in a great defensive set and then we charge down on play five inside their own 40 and give them another set. And then we, you know, work our backside off to defend that and get up the field and then we kick it in the back of our own player. They're just schoolboy errors. We've got to tidy them up. We tidy them up. We've got a very, very good footy side in there. We've got to tidy up the dumb things we did tonight. Get rid of the dumb stuff.
Yeah, there he is, Jason Demetrio, channeling Paul Kelly. They've done all the dumb things.
Look, the mail is they won't get rid of Lachlan Lilias, Tone, that he'll be the halfback again against the Roosters and Jack White will come back in the centres. And I wonder what sort of message it would send if you drop Lachlan Lilias now, given the way Jason's been so outspoken in his support of Lachlan Lilias. You know, he said last year he'd be, I don't want to misquote
South's
him.
South's best halfback.
South's best halfback, better than Adam Reynolds. So if you then turn around two games into a new season and you drop the guy, and Ben said it's not panic stations. That has a little touch of panic about it because you've been so committed to the guy. So, look, the word is Lachlan will stay at halfback. Jack will come back in the centres, but they just need some speed. They look so slow.
Yeah.
So slow. And losing like Tyrone Munro in the preseason, even though he's a young guy, he would have been on one of those wings and he's lightning. So that would have given him a little bit more speed, but Jack will help them, obviously.
I loved Paul Kent's description of that, compared with the speed of the Broncos. He thought they were running in thongs.
Yeah.
Which is the exact image, isn't it, what you think?
It's a huge game. Yeah. The Roosters game. Well, it's always a big game playing against the Roosters. It'll be Jarrabri Hargraves' 300th game as well.
Yep.
And to go, if Souths are 0-3, man. The walls are going to be closing in.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Brian Girdler, Brent Reid, Tony Squires, Ben Teo with you on this Saturday afternoon. I'm not sure where the Panthers hibernate, but certainly there was a Panther started to emerge from some hibernation in that win over the over Parramatta, 26-18. Ryan Girdler, what do you think? What did you see?
It was just another great derby. You know, those two Western City clubs coming together, always a lot to play for, especially when they've both got good sides and will be, I believe, you know, battling for the title this year. So, Parramatta love playing Penrith. They've got a great record against them. They even beat them out there, I think, the last couple of times. So they were certainly going out there with a spring in their step after a pretty solid start to their season. And I thought they were really good. I thought the Eels fans would be happy this morning waking up. You know, they were in that contest until probably about the 70th minute. They had Simonson go off due to foul play by Luai in the second minute or whatever it was. And then they had a back rower who's still trying to work out the system there. Parramatta came from Manly, go out on that edge and unfortunately got carved up because of, you know, Penrith's Christmas. And the way that they executed with the football last night was, you know, back to the best for the Panthers. I thought there was moments defensively where they'll need to improve and you don't see, you know, tries like take nothing away from the way Dylan Brown plays. But, you know, those edge defence mishaps you don't often see at Penrith.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of improvement for them. But I just have to say the way they moved the football around the park, the way they identified that weakness in Parramatta and then just they just absolutely hammered that left edge defensively where too long he was. And also I've got to say, Mitch Kenny for mine, like, you know, last couple of years just sort of watching him develop into just a really top-class dummy half. He didn't play last week, but his service from dummy half, the width of his pass, the accuracy of the pass, the speed of the pass, all those little things. Like when people look at really good attacking sides, they probably say, well, what's the difference between the way Penrith do their shapes and the way the Dragons do their shapes? And a lot of it is just like the accuracy of the passing, where people are catching the pass, the speed of the pass. And I have to say, Mitch Kenny, the way that he combines with Isaiah Yeo and Nathan Cleary, it was on show there last night. He was exceptional. It was his first game back in a while. And defensively, he leads the line. He puts on big shots. Tone, I wouldn't be too surprised if he comes into calculations for the Origin side this year, Mitch Kenny.
Wow.
He's a player.
Yeah.
He's a player. They were great last night, the Panthers. Yeah.
And you know, that forward, you talk about the skills in the backs, but the forwards, I mean, Isaiah Yeo, putting it on an absolute dime, thank you, Cooper. For Taruva in that try was brilliant. Moses Leota, like stepping and sprinting and looking brilliant and quick. They're terrific across the park.
Yeah, and given the way they played in week one, because they were a bit scratchy in week one, and Melbourne put them under a lot of pressure and bustled them into errors, but they're a completely different side this week. A lot slicker, as Gerd said, and when they're when they're in the moment, when they're playing well and everything's worked for them, they're just so hard to stop. You know, people have done it the last 2 years. You know, they're losing round one and everyone goes, oh, this is the year everything, you know, the losses bite them. But yep. They showed last night that they'll be just as competitive, if not more competitive this year than they have been in previous years. I mean, they're that good a footy team. And look, Parramatta's a good foot. They're a good side. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have had some question marks over Parra, but they went with them for a lot of that game. But Penrith they've just got something extra.
No addition to the injury with Mitch Moses. No. Dylan Brown did a lot of the work there. But, you know, was there any sign that Mitch, the pace wasn't quite there?
Well, I mean, given what he went through the week before, you'd think he was a little bit restricted. And obviously, that left, Gerd's talked about that edge. I mean, they lost, obviously, Bale and Simons, and then they lost Tuilagi as well. Ended up with, I can't remember, was it Bryce Carbrough playing in the centres at the end of the game? So, I mean, that made life a little bit difficult for them. Penrith are the most clinical team in the comp. When they see a weakness like that, they just attack it, and they did. And they had a lot of success there. So I'm sure Parramatta walk away from that game thinking, if we don't lose Simonson, maybe it's a different result. They can walk away with a bit of hope, Parramatta.
Yeah. And Benny, as you said, they straightened up there. It started the second half. Great passes from Dylan Brown to, you know, big forwards coming through for tries.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Parramatta at the moment. I think they're up for a good year. I definitely see them in the top four. And I was impressed about the way they went about going through Penrith at the start of the game, just scoring some tries, especially that uncharacteristic one there where Dylan Edwards got caught at marker and he went to sleep. But look, there's not many teams in this competition that have a half like that, you know, with Moses and a 5'8 and a fullback like that. So I just think if they can get it all together, you know, they had a real off year last year, and I think a lot of that was to do with, you know, the off season and some of the
injury, suspension,
and fines and all the drama around them. I think they've cleaned that up now and they're in for a big year.
And they've also got Bank West, you know, like, I mean, they're really hard to play there. They're going to travel well. You've got guys that are just coming into, like, you look at Dylan Brown and he's kind of been that young guy that's sort of building. It just feels like the back end of last year, even though he missed it, but before he got suspended, you know, he was becoming the player that we'd all sort of thought he was going to be. And sometimes that takes time. Then you look at Mitchell Moses and you get the feeling for Mitch, it's like now or never, like this is the roster, we've got it. It's time to really do something. And I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Mitch probably might pull out of that game because of the groin and look after that. Now he knows that, you know, how important he is and how important every 2 points are. So there's a real sort of professionalism and an experience about the Eels that probably hasn't been around before. And I think that'll hold him in good stead. All they need to shore up, I think, Tone, is that edge defence. They've had issues with that edge defence. Like Will Pennacini's good on one side, on that right edge. But, yeah, they, you know, Morgan Harper's come in. He's got some defensive errors in him. He's got a rush of blood in him. If they can find someone probably to fill that hole longer term, there's not too many chinks in their armour at all.
Not too many teams.
Zach Lomax would be handy, wouldn't he?
Oh, stop it. Stop it. There's not too many left-hand side defences that aren't going to be troubled by Isaac Tonga, though.
Yeah.
He's amazing. What was his stats? Like a try, 6 line breaks, 273 run metres.
Just signed a new deal too. Worth every cent given the way he played the other night. I mean, again, one of those blokes who's come through the production line. You know, Taylor May the week before was outstanding against Melbourne.
Yeah.
And Isaac was a little bit quieter, but it was the Isaac Tungo show last night.
Let's have a quick listen to Brad Arthur. He is with Gutha, of course, his captain. Just talking about those rule interpretations and the policing of them.
Oh, I just thought there's some rule changes there that need to be enforced. You can't jump in blokes when they're catching, in front of blokes when they're catching the ball. You can't be downtown in front of kicks. Whether it's a try score or an opportunity, it's downtown. It's a rule.
Rules are rules. Yeah. You got to do what they're doing. And as Brad said, we probably thought we got that on a couple, but
whether it's
just still doesn't. You still got to try and win the game, and didn't win.
Just a hint of bitterness there from the Eels on that. Did you notice anything in that?
I missed the downtown one because I was driving home, but someone actually texted me and said that shouldn't be a try because I think it was Isaiah Yeo was in front of the
play the ball.
Yeah.
And I think he's talking about it because, you know, they've been red hot on it in the trials and in the earlier games. And I'm talking right through the grades of footy, even down to the second, third tier. They're on this rule about the blockers and the downtown. So you'd expect it to be policed pretty heavily. You know, and there was a handful called on Thursday night for South Sydney, just back to back to back.
Well, there was one actually called in the game before that in the Sharks Bulldogs, which actually almost sort of changed the whole fabric of that contest for no reason. So if they're going to do it, the coaches are going to scream consistency, and obviously that wasn't upheld on Friday night.
Okay, Reedy, just for those who may have just joined us, in terms of Jerome Luai, the high shot on Bailey Simonson, and of course the trip on Mitchell Moses, what's the upshot for that?
Yeah, he's been charged over both times, but just fine, so he's free to play next week.
A little bit of spice in the Sharks-Bulldogs game, I thought. From the very outset, it might have been the first tackle, was it, that Famsili gets knocked out, Cam McInnes's head comes in handy.
Reed Marnie was in one of those moods,
wasn't he?
He was just constantly niggling and stinks.
He was the kid up the back of the class just having a crack.
He
would have been knocked out 15 times in the 80s. Reed Marnie yesterday and even the 90s.
Exactly right. But first tackle and, of course, the Bulldogs then were down one player. But what their performance, let's start with Cronulla. What did you make? They were a bit slow starters. By the second half, they'd clicked into gear and looked pretty good.
I think they did what they do, right? They beat the teams they're supposed to beat, Cronulla.
Yep.
And they were expected to beat the Bulldogs. They made really hard work of it in the first half. But second half, Nico Hines sort of took control of the game and got them over the line. So they'll have tougher days. Now, I think I know we're going to talk about the Bulldogs. I thought the Bulldogs were great in this game. But Cronulla just do what they need to do. They win the games they got to win. And that's not the problem with Cronulla. The issue is when they play against the really elite teams come September. That's when the Sharks, it's a different story.
Yeah, when the Sharks get going, it's like they're running downhill. You know, they're just pushing on the footy. They're just making breaks off play two. And especially when Nico Hines, he was creeping down that left-hand short side. When he gets that ball flat and he gets running, they're just dangerous. I mean, he was having a field day out there just putting Teague Wilton through, and they were strolling through Talakai with his quick hands. But I agree with you. When they're not getting those opportunities to be running on the footy with momentum, that's probably where they start to get a little bit lost in their attack.
You know, it's always been about they're waiting for Craig Fitzgibbon to kind of get his fingerprints over that team. You know how sort of, you know, coaches are sometimes represented in their the way that they coach and their personality within the team that they're coaching. And I think finally we're starting to see that. Like, they're turning into a bit of a mature footy side now, the Sharks. Like, they're willing to do whatever it takes now to win games. They did that last week against the Warriors, and that's probably something they haven't done over the last couple of years. But the good thing is, like, they were in a scrap last week against the Warriors. They were in a scrap last night against the Bulldogs. And they're just willing to do whatever it takes to win footy games. And that showed with the attitude of guys like Nico Hines defensively last night. He was just like really good. And then we know, as Benny said, how good they are with the football, but they're just willing to do whatever it takes. And I think there's some really positive signs there for the Sharkies.
Like Nico Hines after the game, because he had the field goal at the end, kicks that. In the interview, he says that, you know, he didn't get it right in the game last year, opportunity to practice it. He was a bit angry that he didn't get the ball earlier and the service wasn't clean. But that kind of thing, you know, he's working on stuff.
Yeah. It's funny, I was talking to one of the assistant coaches after the game. We just have a chat in the sideline, and he was really impressed with what they've done the first 2 weeks, just because of what Gerd said. They've been in games where they've had to, you know, not everything's gone their way, and they've had to, it's been sort of a dogfight. They've come out of that and found something extra to win both those footy games. So, look, I think they're really happy with the way things are going, because they know, you know, well, early in the year, things aren't always going to click. You know, your attack's not always going to be in sync. It's not going to be purring, right? So, you know, if you can come out of those games and win them, yeah, that's really important later in the year. And they're sort of setting themselves. Their draw through the opening 2 months is they could go 8-0.
It's a draw, isn't it?
Outstanding.
Yeah. It's a good one, and especially when they're playing with confidence. Like, you look at guys like Jesse Ramian, you know, Kennedy last night. Like, those guys are actually just going looking for the contests, aren't they? They're just finding ways just to get involved, which means that, you know, they're all up, they're all excited about playing footy, they're really enjoying each other's company, and they really look like a close-knit footy side, you know. And, they're playing some entertaining football, but, you know, they've got the foundations, look like they've been set well in the off-season. they realise the errors of their past, and yeah, they're just hard to recognise from what they were, you know, the last couple of seasons.
And they've got someone like Cam McGuinness, and as a Dragons fan, and he was terrific for our club for years. He was kind of the leading light. He's just you know, head down, bum up kind of guy, isn't he? He works hard. You can see it, and it shows in the results. Or what about the Bulldogs on the other side? You've already said, Reedy said, oh, I've seen great things, but that's happened the past couple of weeks for the Bulldogs. Are they really? Do we really have a sense of improvement in there?
I think they were better, particularly in the first half. They're really unlucky. They didn't get any, nothing went their way. None of the decisions went their way. The bounce of the ball didn't go their way. And they just were gritty and they stuck to their task in that first 40 minutes. Defensively, I mean, on their own line, their goal on defence was outstanding.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think there's encouraging signs. I'm not saying they're going to turn around and finish in the top eight zone, but, you know, I thought there were some promising signs that maybe they're getting better.
All right, well, you talked about some decisions. Let's have a listen to Coach Cam Ciraldo and what he had to say.
Be careful what I say, but, yeah, I was disappointed in a few of them.
You surprised me, Nikora wasn't sent off.
It's hard to get caught up into that one. I haven't had too many looks at it, but it didn't look great, but he's not that sort of player. Yeah, wasn't a great look.
What about having a try disallowed when you have Billy Armin kick out running into guy probably 20 kilos lighter than him one-on-one? Did you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I've got lots of thoughts on it. What do you think? I don't want to be rude. I just... Trying to bite my tongue on it a little bit. Like I just felt like at halftime we could have been, the score could have been a lot different, and that could have changed the sort of tempo of the game. And Taff gets, tackled in the air, loses the ball. Like that's a penalty every day of the week. Kick out, from what I saw, it wasn't a high tackle, and that was a penalty. And I could go on and on, but, you know, I'm going to have to send them in this week and get some clarity on some of them, because there's just so many of them. And, you know, I felt like that last year, but, you know, we were hurting ourselves last year, and we weren't, you know, we didn't have that same level of effort. Now I've got that little level of effort from our guys. I want us to get the fair calls. I want us to, get what they deserve, because they're not getting it at the moment.
And there he is. Well, certainly, so the kick-out one, I think it was the tackle on Will Kennedy that was ruled as a high tackle, was definitely chest at worst.
Yeah.
So what about the new rules, the decision-making, and what happened? Boys, what are your thoughts?
Which rule? Say that.
Any of those decisions that Cam Ciraldo's talking about.
The downtown?
Yep.
Yeah, look, there was a couple of ones there that he spoke about, like the jumping in the air, through, getting it tough.
Yeah, I think like there's been real clarity from the referees, I think, in the off season. Everyone understands the rules. He's probably walking a little bit of a fine line there about, obviously making out like he's not getting any of the calls. But look, you have those days. I think there's some real improvement in the Dogs. As he said, he's built that foundation now. He feels like he's getting the effort and he wants some fair calls. But look, everyone's just looking for the consistency, as I said. Coaches, everyone was sent through the clips on the downtown rules, the jump in it before the catcher gets the footy. So that's all they want, is a bit of consistency.
Yeah, what I'm seeing with the Bulldogs, Tone, is the fact that they look like a connected group. I think what's happened, they've brought people in there that really know how to work as a unit. I think, the training sessions will be a lot different. When you're not having success, it's easy to sort of splinter off. And everyone starts worrying about the individual. But what I've seen in the last couple of performances, especially yesterday, is that, they're just, and you can see with the way Marnie and that were carrying on, like they're just willing to go into battle for each other. And they look like a tighter unit that I've seen in a long, long time for the Bulldogs. And I think that's what Cam Ciraldo meant by, they're going to earn the right. Like they want things to go their way because he feels like, they're earning it. And that's what will happen. If you continue to play like that with that sort of effort and commitment to each other and the cause, things will turn around. I think that's where the Bulldogs are at. It was so good yesterday to see that Viliami Kikau 3 years ago was the best back row in the comp, with what he did at Penrith. And, with that injury and the lack of form and obviously playing with the Bulldogs, to see him, back into that sort of, environment where there was opportunities for him on the left-hand side, building the combination with Burton, Taff at the back was really busy. They've got some players in now that are really coming there and going to make a difference for them. So, I was impressed with, I know they got beat by 20 points, but, there were some impressive things to how they went about their business yesterday.
I would say I reckon the ref's got the kick out no try correct, where
the referee gets in the way.
The referee got in the way because, look,
but he scores that every time.
He scores it every time.
If the referee disappears, he still scores that try.
The ball's not bouncing their way, but I don't think that was a refereeing error. I think that was, it's a refereeing error. He probably got himself in the wrong position. Yeah. But the actual decision was correct. It's just unlucky. But that's the way it is for Canterbury at times. you know, the past year and a half.
Yeah.
They don't get the luck.
So what about, I know that you got some trouble, Ryan, with the rule of the players who get in the way at the play the ball of the kicker, the chase Lockers. From dummy half to the kicker.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I know Benny's in a system, so we're gonna have a chat about, you know, what's actually the way that they're training and what they're trying to do. But I just thought that on the game on Thursday night with the Rabbits, it was kind of, I think it might have been early in the second half, the game was kind of in the balance and Kepi got done.
Mm-hmm.
And he got done for just sort of running through as a lead runner and they were passing out the back for a kick. I'm not sure what tackle it was. And then the penalty went against him and the Broncos end up getting a penalty on halfway and I think end up scoring off the back end of the pressure that was built from that decision.
Yeah.
And it was just a shame to see, you know, that's part of the game, a decision that was so crucial go against the Rabbits for something that Benny, I just thought was elementary almost. He was just running through with his hands up, looking to get the football. They passed it behind him, and you could see Payne Huss went out of his way, ran into him and milked the penalty, and the referees, instead of using discretion, actually fell for the play, and it had a big impact, I thought, on the outcome of the game.
Yeah, a lot of people will be watching that at home and thinking to themselves, well, you know, Sean Kepi is behind the play of the ball, so he can take a pass.
He had his hands up.
He had his hands up. But
I was convinced.
He was very close to the ruck, though. And so even though he's close to the ruck, the rule is now that the two markers that are going to jump out and put some kick pressure and chase down your kicker, you cannot impede that, like, their line. They should not have to change their line to run around you.
But what if he's going to get the ball? What if it's fourth play?
Yeah, you're still not allowed to make them change their line. So what you have to do is you have to pull off the ball and you have to be further away from the ruck. So even though you're onside and you could receive a pass, even if it's a 20-centimetre pass.
That's ludicrous.
That's the rule. That's the new rule. If you have to block, if those markers have to run around you to get to your kicker, right, then it's a penalty. So before it used to be about we're trying to protect our kickers. Now we're saying, hey, guys, let's open up the highway here for these guys so they can go straight through and get them. Wow. But you can't touch
them. You can't touch them.
You can go up
there
and scare them. Well, you can't touch
them. But you can't do that anyway. You can't scare people anymore.
No, you're not allowed to scare people. Not in the NRL.
Okay.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
Bit of everything. Bit of everything going on here. I'll need you to use your names as your buzzers. If you wouldn't mind testing those for me, please.
Ready.
Tio.
Skipper. Okay. So glad Skipper's still with us. All right, here we go. Question number one. Have a listen. Who is this and why is tonight's game important to him? I guess I kind of like the
way you numbed all the pain. Well, Reedy.
Yes, Reedy.
It's Dale, isn't it? Finucane?
It is Dale
Finucane. He played his 250th last night.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Last night's game is what I meant to say. Yeah, I obviously wrote this quiz yesterday.
Tony, I want that. I actually want that scratch from the record because that question didn't make any sense at all.
And he didn't use his buzzer.
Yeah.
I did. So,
he said Reedy.
That needs to be stricken from the record because I knew it was Dale, but I didn't know what the last part of the question meant because it wasn't
surely
relevant.
I wrote it yesterday.
No way.
Yeah. No way.
Doesn't matter, Tone. I'll beat him anyway. It's all good.
Nah. Hey, let's go. I'm going to Gandhi it. I'm not going to speak unless
say it again. Hey, back up, Sparky. Yeah, you're answering the questions. You're not asking the questions. Gandhi, what are you going to sit down and protest?
Yeah, I just
get your shirt off.
Yeah, don't speak.
All right. So, Reedy, you know, I'm doubling it. You've got 2 points. Yeah.
Oh, that's a joke.
All right. And of course, it was Cam Smith who's played the most NRL games. Reedy. With 430. No.
Oh,
Jesus. Who is next? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Cooper Cronk.
Correct, Cooper Cronk. He got that one on absolute dime. 372.
Such a Queensland suck you are.
Wow, he's coming hot and bitter and twisted.
Yeah, he's been studying in the off-season.
Right. This is a question for Gerds and Reedy, near recipient. How many NRL games did Ben play?
Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
I'm going to say 172.
Okay.
Ooh, I was going to say, I'll go 193.
It's 174, Gerds.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, well done.
Yes.
Well done.
You know, I was going to say, I was going to say 174, but because he said 172,
I'm
psychic.
Yeah. There's going to be a change in career for me.
Yeah. Wow, absolutely. That's once you start channeling Gandhi, you can't go wrong, obviously. So you can sit back, in fact, for this one. This one's for Ben and Reedy.
Okay.
How many games did Gerds play?
Whoa. Reedy.
Mm-hmm.
211.
Okay. Benny?
I'm going to go 221.
Your nearest pin, 227 games it is.
Yeah.
All right, so this one's for Ben and Gerds. How many NSL games did Reedy play?
Skipper. Skipper. One off the bench.
No.
No. Oh. This is the National Soccer League we're talking about.
Oh, okay. Benny? No, I thought you meant the for the Socceroos.
Three.
Well, you're closest. It was five. All right, yeah. Next question. Who admitted to photoshopping a family picture this week?
Terry. Oh,
yeah. Yes, Benny.
Go Reedy. You go.
You go, Reedy.
Was it Princess... What's, is it Kate? What's,
yes, it is.
Kate, yeah.
You get a point taken off for knowing that. That was very disappointing.
That's right.
Okay. Which film and sporting figure presented an Oscar naked?
Tio.
Yes, Benny.
John Cena.
John Cena. Congratulations. Who will host the women's
sporting figure?
Tio's been reading New Idea again.
How's wrestling not sport? What is it?
It's entertainment.
It's in the Olympics.
It's a real sport. It's a real sport.
Speaking from the records.
It is a sport.
That's a dumb
question. It's a leading question.
Show them some respect. Show them some respect.
Yes, thank you. If darts is a sport, WWE is a sport.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Who will host the Women's Asia Cup in 2026?
Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
Asia.
Oh, my God.
Tio. Dubai?
Yes, Ben. Dubai, no.
Ready?
Yes.
Well, it's not confirmed yet, though, is it? But it's Australia.
Yes, they're the only one. Everybody else has pulled out. The only one still standing.
Has it been confirmed or not, Reedy?
What's that?
Stricken from the record. Has it been confirmed or not, Reedy?
Has it been confirmed? No.
Has it been confirmed?
Every other nominee city has withdrawn.
Genos don't worry about if it's confirmed or not.
Oh, that's
they
a good
just
point.
Go with it.
That's
Australia.
A good point. Reedy knew it.
Speculation.
Of course Reedy knew it.
Yeah, just be first. Don't be right. Just be first.
Sources confirmed it could be Australia.
Sources who refuse to be named so they can speak freely.
I think it's
Wait, I'm just reviewing the scores. Skipper minus 18.
Okay.
All right. Now, this one here, this is the final question. It's my favourite question I've ever asked. It's just because Ben is here. Which land animal is the closest living relative of the dolphin?
Land animal.
What's that? Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
The Komodo dragon.
Is that right?
No, I would have accepted Wayne Bennett, but no, it is in fact the hippopotamus.
Really?
The hippopotamus.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, related well to the dolphin.
Can I ask, what happened to spelling things backwards? That was my specialty. Struck from the record.
We did it last week.
Yeah, Cham has got it very well.
Every second week we're going to do it, Reedy.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
We'll get you ready now to do some of your journo things. The charge sheet reminds again and injuries out of the games thus far.
Yeah, the big news out of the charge sheet time is Britton Nikora is facing 2 to 3 games for that half-pipe shoulder charge, I guess, on Viliami Kikau. Jerome Luai had 2 charges. They're both fine, so he's free to play next week. In terms of injuries, Bailey Simonson, he's in the concussion protocols now, and Kelma Tuolungi, went off as well. He has got to undergo scans to see how he is. So they were the big sort of injury / judiciary news out of last night.
But it wasn't the big news of the sporting day, though.
No, my niece, Ellie, she made a debut today, played the first game of rugby league. They lost by 2 points, but her sister, Ruby, sent me a match report, said she played really well. So well done, Ellie. Good job.
Got any stats on Ellie's performance?
No stats, Ellie.
Right.
She's playing for Wynnum.
For Wynnum, Ali, what's her surname?
Ali Hawkins.
All right. What positions does she play?
I think she played in the front row today.
All right. You think?
I think, yeah. Okay. The match report didn't include where she played, Tom, but she handled herself well, apparently. Well done, Ali.
Well done, Ali. Well played. Well played the Broncos as well. We talked about the Rabbitohs and that performance meant for them. How good do the Broncos look? That is next on the Saturday Scrum.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
We, of course, have Ben Teo. We have Ryan Girdler in Queensland. Have you gentlemen voted today, elections in Queensland?
No, I never vote on election day, Tony. I always find out where the early voting centres are, and I miss the crowd, so I did mine on, like, Tuesday.
Right, okay.
Tuesday, wow. Yeah.
Did you, a lot of contemplation about who you were?
Yeah,
you
know, lots of contemplation, lots of research, made sure I went in there to made a difference. It's important, get out there and vote, like... First, you know, the amount of people that I heard walk out of the voting, it was like a little town hall and go, geez, I didn't know any of those people. I just sort of threw down a couple of numbers. Like, and if you don't know anyone, like, I think it's really important these days that you just do a little bit of research and you go in there and you try and get a decent outcome. Because
research
there's a lot of palookas out there running for candidates these days, Tom. Well, there always has been, but there seems to be more than ever these days. There's some absolute muppets.
They're always standing on the side of the road just waving.
For an easy earn.
Hey, just waving, holding their sign up, just waving at everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You do know it wasn't a state election, don't you? It was a council election.
Yeah, it was a council, yeah. Noosa Council I'm voting in these days.
It's a very big... There were two by-elections. No, by-elections for Ipswich, West, I think, and Inala. By and large, it's a council election.
Yeah.
You get fined if you don't vote for a council election.
Yeah, they say it's compulsory, Tony.
Okay. No, well, as it should be. Everybody should and must exercise their
every
democratic
vote
right.
Tony, every vote counts.
Every vote counts. All right. What about the Broncos? We spoke about the Rabbitohs end of that stick. 28-18, the Broncos got the job done. We spoke about maybe a lack of pace at the Rabbitohs. There's certainly nothing of that missing in the Broncos camp.
No, and it's obviously that's led by Reece Walsh, who was outstanding on Thursday night. So good, and he's so good to watch, man.
Isn't he?
He's such a footballer. But Dean Mariner as well. I mean, you mentioned the pace. I mean, Dean Mariner was outstanding for them and keeping Corey Oates out of that side. And look, I mean, when Reece Walsh gets going, they're just so hard to stop. He is so dangerous, and he just creates something. He just creates things. He's such a good – I love watching him play.
Yeah, the solo try and then the involved in the early setup and then a kick comes through and it bounces beautifully for him, as you'd expect. And over he goes.
People talk about them maybe not, you know, being weaker this year and maybe not repeating what they did last year. And Reece Walsh is why they can repeat what they did last year, because he is – surely he's only going to get better. He's 21, Reece, is he? I think he's 21, 22?
Yeah, he's
21. Yep. I mean, he's scratching the surface of his potential.
Yeah, I didn't think the Broncos were anywhere near their best, but just with the athletes and Payne, I know he went off for a little bit in the game with his knee, but just the athletes of him and Carrigan and Pierre Corr was impressive. And just having someone who's so steady to the game plan like Adam Reynolds, you know, he just focused on in the first half just putting that kick in behind Richie Kenner and Alex Johnson, and he was just patient with it. And then, you know, Reece Walsh, he's box office. And there was a lot of talk in the lead up to the game about Corey Oates and him feeling hard done by. He's not on the team. He doesn't want to play Queensland Cup. Dean Mariner, I mean, the speed that he's got, he just showed he's electric. There was a couple of times there where South tried to go around them, and in 1 second, he just shut it down. He just closed the space. So I think there's a fair bit of improvement to come from the Broncos, but there's not many teams in the competition that have athletes like that.
That's the thing about the Broncos. I mean, it's not a complicated game plan that they need to be successful. It's just, you know, they got it right through the middle. Pia Cora going off in Vegas wasn't good because Carrigan went out on that edge, and then they lose that second phase play, and it's just a power game, isn't it? And when they're dominant through the middle, and it took them a while to sort of get on top of South Sydney, and I thought South Middle did a pretty good job, but eventually when they crack and they just start sort of stripping them for defenders and they give Reece Walsh the football, it's all over. Yeah, they just convert the opportunity. So, yeah, like Benny, like defensively they were pretty resilient, I thought. You know, South threw a fair bit at them at times. They had some good goal line defence. I thought, you know, Cobbo was really good in the centres. Like, he got a little bit lost in defence over there in Vegas. But, again, you know, that combination on that left edge is a new one with Pia Cora. Now they don't have Capewell, they don't have Farmworth, two really good defensive players around Ezra. And Ezra's just a guy that, you know, definitely likes to throw his body, likes the contact, but sometimes decision-making isn't great. So he's going to need guys around him, you know, that can help him out defensively. Most halves do these days. And I think, you know, Selwyn went out there with a mindset around, because we know how good he is with the football around defence. And now he'll start knowing who he needs to look after, you know, how much he can rely on Ezra and how much he needs to, you know, look after his young winger as well on his outside. So, I enjoyed that game. I like watching the Broncos live. It's always entertaining, and there's a good crowd there, and I think it was a nice hit back for them.
Carrigan, again, impressive, alongside really with Payne Haas as well. Just, you know, we talk about how quick they are, but that motor up the middle.
Well, but Gerds are spot on, and that was one of the issues with them in Vegas when Paddy Carrigan had to move to the edge because Pierre Cora went off, and you saw how much he means to them when they've got him and Payne Haas, that 1-2 punch. I mean, they just dominated South through the middle of the field. And when that's happening, you know, Reece just works his magic. I wonder about Ezra. He's had a bit of a slow start to the year, Ezra Mann. Is there any concerns maybe over – I know it was a tough week for him last week, obviously, but You know, I thought he was quiet the other night. I know defensively he had a red hot go, but he just doesn't look quite on it in attack at the moment. Am I wrong or?
Oh, I just think that, you know, what is it? It's really Ezra's second year, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, people, your sides go out there now. He's one of the sort of, he's top billing or as Benny likes to say, he's a little bit box office. Can I use your team box office?
That
was a good one.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's on all the tip shoots these days. He's attacking. Everyone knows what he can do. So people know what Ezra's about. They know that they need to shut him down. They know that he's another sort of on that left side. He's like, if Bruce Walsh isn't there, we'll look out for Ezra. So it's going to be a lot more difficult for him to find those open spaces this year because he's going to be a marked man, Benny.
Yeah, no, I agree. Every time you're a runner too, you know, I remember when Anthony Milford came onto the scene, he was quite similar. He used to take on the line. But as teams do their homework, they understand how you like to run, which foot you like to come off, how to nullify you. And, yeah, look, he's had a fair bit go on in the last few weeks. He might have a little bit of a slow start. But one thing, as you mentioned, Reedy, is his willingness to hit. For a half is always a great sign. Always a great sign. You get that right, his attack will come later on in the season.
Doesn't that just show, you know, people highlighted his missed tackles last year, but stats can be so deceiving sometimes. You can use a stat to almost demonstrate anything. I never thought Ezra was a defensively weak player. Never.
Yeah.
You know, but it's the way he defends, right? I mean, he shoots out the line and
he bounces off.
Yeah.
So he'll stop the progress of the person in front of him, which is sometimes more effective. And then they might bounce back and then someone else will come and get him. And that goes down as a missed tackle. Don't worry about stats.
Don't worry about it. Well, all right. Next week, a tasty morsel, really, isn't it? It's the grand final rematch. They take on the Panthers. That sounds like a great game already.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously Penrith hit form again, didn't they, on last night? So, and Brisbane were pretty good the other day. So, you know, got two really good football teams and two teams. I think we all expect they'll be there at the pointy end of the year, right? It wouldn't surprise if that's the grand final again. But, you know, Brisbane looking for a bit of revenge, I imagine.
Hey, Reedy, we saw Adam Reynolds come off late in that one. Is he going to be available? Will he play?
I don't think so, Gerds. I mean, they're saying that was, I think, an MCL strain for memory, and they'd play it by ear. They didn't give a time frame on how long he would be out, but I'd be surprised if he plays.
Why didn't you say that in our injury news at the top of the show?
Yeah, I forgot about that, yeah.
Busy doing shout-outs.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Adam Reynolds got a knee problem, so he'll probably be out this week.
Things right. Anyway, it's the old Reedy. Not that it's not important, of course.
It was another 24 hours earlier, so I thought we'd moved on.
Of course.
Yeah, I shouldn't have, yeah, sorry. Yeah. So Adam Reynolds, he's got an MCL problem. They put a statement out last night, actually, during the first game.
It gets worse and worse for you.
So I reckon he'll be back at some point reasonably soon.
Okay, so just reminding you, in the big news, Ali did play in the front row.
Yeah, she did play in the front row, yeah. Two points at loss point. Well done, Ali.
Benji Marshall, of course, makes his first official debut as the head coach at the Tigers this afternoon, which is a big enough story in itself. But through the week, we learned the story that perhaps he's not a 24/7 coach. Not sure if those are his exact words, but maybe he's looking for a work-life balance. Many who have thought maybe that's not the way that coaches should go. He wasn't particularly happy with the story. Let's have a listen to how he reacted.
What I don't like is when things are told that are not true. Yeah, anyway, you ask anyone in the building, I'm in here at 5:45 training with the staff before the players get in, so they see us doing the hard yards before they come. And my work ethic is, you don't play 347 games from home in poor work ethic. And then coaching-wise, I know I've got a lot to learn. I know I have to work hard, and it's annoying because it's not true. It's as simple as that.
You make no apologies, though, for not being a 24/7 coach.
But what's a 24/7 coach?
Blokes that gets live and breathe, sort of go to bed.
Who says I don't? Who said I don't?
I don't know.
I'm asking you. You said 24/7.
Well, I'm assuming 24/7 coaches are coaching.
When do you not sleep?
4:00 in the morning. I slept like a baby.
I was up at 4:00 this morning.
Yeah.
So, what are you asking?
Yeah. But I take it it's the modern day coach. You don't have to do. I mean,
what's the modern day
longer
coach?
Longer hours is not necessarily better. Is that the case?
I come into work early before the players. Work as hard as we can until we get what we need done. Then we go home. Because I prioritise my family between 5 and 8 p.m. every night to find a work-life balance, that doesn't mean I don't care about my job or care about working hard. I don't get it.
Good on him.
Yeah.
good on him for responding. Now, the idea, obviously, what he was railing against mostly was that notion that there was a work ethic problem, that, in fact, he was in hours later than the rest of his staff. Who knows where that's come.
Well, he says that's wrong.
Yeah.
He said, you heard him then. He said, I'm in there every morning. The work ethic thing, and I agree with it. Agree with him. Benji had 5 shoulder reconstructions during his career and still played more than 300 games. You don't do that unless you've got an amazing work ethic.
Yeah.
An amazing work ethic. So, look, I mean, look, Benji's, I wouldn't say prolific, but he's on social media. Not many coaches are on social media. And you go on social media, you see Benji has a holiday in Fiji and plays some golf, and everyone goes, well, that must be what he does with his time. But he's not. He works hard. He works really hard. And I wouldn't say he's trying to change the wheel with coaching, but I applaud him for saying between 5 and 8, I'm focusing on my family. I mean, your kids are only kids for so long. At some point they grow up and they don't want to be around you anymore. So if he wants to spend time with his wife and his family between 5 and 8, I don't have an issue with that.
And if it helps him function better in those work hours. Absolutely. I mean, there hasn't been a game yet.
So no,
I know. He's coughing. Benny Teo, you're involved. You're coaching. You're involved in the setup. You see Wayne Bennett happening and you're coaching yourself. Where does the correct mix lie?
Well, first of all, I just think the timing of it's interesting, isn't it? Right before he coaches his first game, he's got all these questions about his work ethic. I'll probably disagree with you, Reedy, that I don't think what you did in your playing career has any bearing on what you are as a coach. I think they're two separate things. And the only thing that matters is results. That's all that matters. And the only thing that matters is what his players think. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. I remember when I first started coaching at the Dolphins, and I asked Wayne something along the lines of what hours he wanted, and he said to me, Ben, in coaching, there's no hours. There's no such thing as hours.
So he didn't turn up for the next week?
Yeah, exactly. It's all about results. So whatever you need to do to get your team right and get them to win is all that matters. No one's going to say whether you did 80 hours or you did 40 hours or you did 20 hours. But I've said this, you know, footy players can be very stupid, but they are very smart and they can sense things. So if some of them sense that maybe he's not there on certain days or he's off early or he's in late, then they'll know. And that's all that matters is what your team think of you and what they see from you.
Good.
We were just talking then. I was talking to Benny about balance then, because, you know, in the break, and he was talking about, you know, he's got 3 kids all under 5, and you know, you got to find the balance in the imbalance, you know, and sometimes there's just certain times in your life where you know it's head down, ass up, and you'll get balance back at some point. And Benny's, you know, his balance is taking his boy down to make him, how's his tone? We've got him to be a docic here. He makes him go down and hit 20 tennis balls over the net before he can go for a swim, regardless of how hot it is.
No.
And then he's even got footage of it.
That's balance. That's what you call balance.
Yeah, so that's, you know, Benny's balance. But look, in relation to Benj, I mean, you know, he's just got to be the coach that the West Tigers need him to be. You know, he's probably, I think you just come into a job like that with an idea of what you want your coaching career to look like, and I think if that's the case, there's probably the wrong attitude. I think the best mindset to go into a job like that is, what do they need from me to be a better group of men? What do they need from me as a coach to get some results? Not thinking about, oh, what's, you know, Benji Marshall's coaching career look like? It's, you know, what are the West Tigers going to look like? What do they need from me to get some results on the field so that group are, you know, keeping the fans happy, they're happy within themselves, that brings balance to their life because they're walking around and they're enjoying training and they're enjoying things away from the game as well. So, and I feel like Benj knows that, so it'll be interesting to see how they go out this afternoon, because I tell you what, Tony, there's not one coach in the game that would like Benji's Marshall's transition to be an easy one.
Yep.
More so than Ricky Stewart. He will just be rolling out the red carpet for Benji down there in Canberra this week.
Absolutely.
You know, if they finish out of the bottom 14, Benji's done a great job. Look at that roster. I mean, that's not a top 8 roster.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be in the mix at all for the top 8. If they can avoid the bottom 4, I think he's had a great year. And then Jerome Luai comes and they look making some other signings and they slowly build. But, you know, people are probably going to whack him if he doesn't win a lot of games early on, but
yeah.
I don't expect them to.
Just back on that, I mean, that work-life balance thing. I mean, part of being a coach is it's not just, you know, doing your defensive shapes and all that kind of stuff. it's about relating to them. It's about almost parenting in some way, isn't it? So, you know, you've got to experience life, haven't you? You've got to come through. And Wayne Bennett, one of the great things, even despite massive age difference, he seems to be able to relate to the human in the football boots, Ben.
Yeah, I think one of the the best things I've learned from Wayne is that, you know, he still thinks as if he was a footballer. So if there's too much meetings or training's gone too long or something along those lines, then he knows when to pull it up because he always says that if I'm bored, then you're bored.
Yep.
So I think that's where he can find that balance. And, you know, you want to make sure that you have balance in yourself but also with the players. But, probably for a lot of NRL coaches starting out, there probably was no balance. You know, I don't think Craig Bellamy went down to Melbourne Storm when he first started in 2003 and thought about his work-life balance. I think it was just, yeah, he was all in, and that's what a lot of coaches are like. So if Benji can do it another way, then that's awesome. Good on him. I think if he can get results, even better.
Having spoken to Benji, I think he thinks that's one of his great strengths, his relationship with players.
Yep.
I think he thinks he still thinks a lot like footballers, and I think that's one thing he has learned from Wayne. He's very close to Wayne, still speaks to him just about every day, I think. And I think from Wayne, he's learned the value of relationships with footballers and having empathy for them and understanding them. And I think that, in Benji's eyes, that's one of his great strengths, and we'll see whether it pans out that way.
From where in the building does this information seep, the allegations that he was, you know, in there a couple of hours after the rest of the coaching stuff?
Well, I think there's obviously vested interests. I mean, that's a very... That football club, I don't think it's internal. I think it's maybe... The suspicion is it's people who were once there who are no longer there. It's in their interest to some of them to under and no names obviously. And,
yep.
But
okay,
to have the club not succeed.
Okay, Rudy, you said avoid the bottom four. What's the pass mark, Gerds, for you for the Tigers in this season?
What's a pass mark? Well, I think the Tigers will win their third consecutive spoon, Tony. So yeah. I think anything above that, like if they can avoid the bottom four, I think they're doing a good job. Just looking at their roster, got a new coach. I think some of the key areas, at the start of the year, I always go through every side and I look at those key positions. And I know that they've got two of them covered. I really like Buller and I really like Apicoroso, obviously. But there's too much instability for me in their halves this year. And I think in their middles, you know, I'm not convinced that they can compete with the top side. So they're just key areas that I just don't think this year they've got covered. So I think they'll struggle.
Benny, what are you looking forward to? Because there's only, under 90 minutes now before kickoff when we'll all begin to be revealed for the Tigers when they run out against the Raiders.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever been so excited to watch the Raiders play the West Tigers, but there's a fair bit that's gone on this week. I can't wait to see, but I agree with Gerds. I suppose you got to get off the bottom of the ladder, and it would probably more be around their recruitment. You know, they've lost a couple of guys. You know, the Dolphins have come and signed Junior Tupou. If they can lock down some of their good young talent, I think that would be a win for them and not let them get poached away, because every time you lose a young player in his early 20s, you know, it sets the club back a long time.
Big day for Lachlan Galvin today, Tone.
Yes.
18-year-old kid, local kid. Well, he's a Parramatta kid and joined them, but...
Lots of expectation around
Huge hopes for him.
So playing the halves, quite a tall boy, quite a big boy.
Quite tall. I think he might end up in the back row at some point, but apparently he came... back to preseason training, just won every fitness drill. And Benji's had his been glowing about him throughout the preseason. So big day for him and his family.
Jason Tamalolo from the Cowboys on a massive contract, as we know, was $1 million a season. He played 20 minutes in the first round. Now there's talk of him being nursed through the final years of that contract. How does that work?
I spoke to the Cowboys on Monday about this, and I just rang him and said, what happened with Jason? Was he injured? I spoke to Michael Luck, who's the head of footy, and Lucky said, look, they just wanted to nurse him through that game to make sure they got him through the rest of this season and the remaining 3 years of his career. He's got a knee injury. Obviously, there's been a bit of whisper around that maybe he may not see out the 3 years. He's on big money, obviously. So I think that's one we just got to watch, Tone, because clearly all's not well with his knee. Mm. And that's a lot of money to be paying a guy to only play 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's hard to nurse through your marquee player on that kind of...
Well, how do you nurse a bloke through 3 years? Four years, really.
Yeah. Do you think he will?
I don't think he'll see out that deal, no. I think at some point they'll find a way to... I just don't think he'll see it out.
It's hard to know... how bad the knee is, isn't it? Because, you know, from a Cowboys point of view, it would be beneficial for them to medically retire him and clear up their cap and all those things. And but the other issue with Jason Taumalolo is he's always played big minutes and he's always sort of ran himself fit. So if he's only playing 20 minutes a game, that's probably where you're going to get less production out of him going through the season. Yeah, he had a big engine and he used to cause a lot of damage through the middle of the field. So I could see the downside of that is him being not as much sort of match fit, and then you know, then you got a guy
not
who's
having the impact. Well, 31 meters he ran last week. You know, you don't have a guy like that in your side if he's only going to give you 31 meters. He's a guy that puts the team on his back and you know carries them forward. They got some. I just think you know. I just hope it's not the sort of politically motivated, Rudy, this one, because, you know, I still reckon if you could get 50 or 60 minutes out of him, as long as you, like, wouldn't you kind of want to get the most as you could out of him? And then if he ends up getting medically retired, well, then you take that when it comes.
Yeah,
but for the moment, like, you know, look at their pack. They've got Cotter, Nanai, Lukey, McLean, you know, Tom. It's an A-grade pack, and they showed that last week. So I don't know. If Jace is up for it, I'd be just driving him into, you know, all the footy I could get him.
Absolutely.
And then at the end of the day, you know, if he's done, he's done.
The reason it sounds strange is because it is strange. I don't think I've ever heard, Reedy, have you, where a team said, oh, we've got this guy, I'm just going to play him 20 minutes a game for the next 3 years and just get him through to the end.
I don't think the plan is to play him 20 minutes a game, though, Benny. I think the plan is, look, that game was in the bag, so they didn't need to put him back on. So in games where maybe, you know, the results decided, they pull him off and protect him. But if they need him, they leave him on the field for longer. But, I mean, I just find it strange.
You'll never get fit.
Well, I just find it strange. You're already looking at nursing a guy through the season when he's got 3 years left on his deal. I mean, it's just it just can't – you just can't nurse a bloke through 3 years.
How old is he now, Reedy? Is he 30?
He'd be early 30s, I would have thought.
Early 30s, okay.
Maybe
I think he is 30 or 29, not even that, maybe 28. He's close to 30.
He's 30.
There you go.
He's 31 this year.
Good research immediately.
There are a lot of clubs out there that'd love to have him on their roster.
But again, are they going to take a risk on him now that it's out there now that he's got a knee issue that's going to plague him for the rest of his career? I mean, clubs would be real, I would imagine, reluctant to take a chance on a guy like that.
See, I mean, the different code, obviously. The Swans did a similar thing with Lance Franklin. They called it, he was managed, you know, through the last couple of seasons. So he was never expected to play every game, but, you know, when he would play, he would make.
Well, that feels like the path that's heading down, Tony.
Yeah. All right, what about, is he going to jump straight back into the Melbourne side? Of course, beat Penrith last week. I'm talking about Nelson Asipa-Solomona, because there's whispers around that there's some tensions going on.
He'll come back through reserve grade, Tone. I mean, look, he's got, I think it's a hamstring problem's kept him out. He didn't play the preseason from memory, and he hasn't played their opening two games. He won't play their opening two games. And there's just a bit of talk that maybe all's not well down there with Nelson. Look, it's not. I don't think it's untenable. I don't think it's irreparable.
Yeah.
But he needs to win back some support from people within the place. And if he can't, we know what Melbourne are like. I mean, they'll find a way to eventually. If you don't toe the line, then you're not part of the line. So I think it's just one we've got to keep an eye on, because there's just some tension there.
Ben, you think, he's still got plenty to offer, surely, Nelson?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in a big game, he can be the difference, isn't he? He comes on the field, he changes, he has big moments. But, you know, I haven't heard much around the fact that if they were off him. But, you know, one thing you see about Melbourne, they must have had an enormous preseason, because the way they came out in that round one, just the speed and effort and energy that they brought, maybe if he's not in shape as much as some of the other guys, that's probably why you could be off someone like that, especially when you've invested a lot of money in him. But let's hope that he gets back in shape and works his way through reserve grade, because, I mean, what an animal when he's on the field.
I reckon they need him at some point. Like, look, in those big games at the back end of the year, like he was a circuit breaker for him last year at the back end of the season. You know, he's a guy that when you like, Kamakamitha doesn't have a lot of footy in him. King doesn't have a lot of footy in him. I mean, you know, offloading skills and that sort of stuff, creating opportunities. Liero is another guy. So he's kind of like he's a middle X factor for those guys that can come on and really break a game open. He's a guy that when he's got the right attitude can, you know, put on a shot. He gets the boys up. He can go after another opposing player, put him off his game. So there's a lot of strings to his bow. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Right, Vegas, obviously a huge success for the NRL in terms of, you know, certainly eyes from this part of the world. Is Peter Vlandis seriously looking at Origin going to New Zealand?
Well, they've taken it to Melbourne, they've taken it to Perth, they've taken it to Adelaide. You might as well take it to Auckland as well, I'd imagine. I mean, it's obviously becoming a real rugby league stronghold these days, a real rugby union area, but league's just going gangbusters over there. So, yeah, I think Peter considers everything seriously. Every option, Vegas showed that. So I'd imagine at some point, yes, they'll go to Eden Park, play a Origin game there.
Good. Do you like the idea?
Yeah, I think that's a great reward for the fans of New Zealand who have, you know, we know what they've been through over the last couple of years, the way they've responded now to the Warriors' success over the last couple of seasons, and then obviously how they turned out in round one. It was just great to see. And yeah, you know, I'd be more than happy if we're going to do that. If every one game every series is going to go somewhere that's not New South Wales or Queensland, I don't see why New Zealand couldn't be an opportunity over there.
Do you think that's a good thing though, taking one game away?
I don't. I would like to stick to the two to one. That works, but that's never going to come back.
Yeah, okay. Mm.
Yeah, that's lost, sadly.
It's all about money.
Yeah,
it's all about money.
Reedy, I enjoyed your story on Jared Warrior Hargreaves, and it was one of those classic yarns about a man who was much feared on the footy field, but according to your report, one of the gentle giants off it.
He's a lovely bloke, Jared. Mm-hmm. I said in there one of the great shames now, he doesn't do a lot of media interviews now because he was always a great bloke to talk to, lovely guy. I mean, he's always polite, but he just doesn't do a lot of media these days. Well, I just think he's decided that, you know, footy and family are important to him, and he's done his time as in terms of the media. So he does the odd one, but he's a cracking bloke. And speaking to people about him, it just reinforces what sort of I always suspected, that he's just a great guy. Great guy who loves his family, loves his footy, and, you know, he'll go past 300 games in 2 weeks, provided he gets through this week against Manly. That's 299, and
amazing.
Then 300's a week later. And to do that in the middle of the field and to play the way he has, I mean, he's missed basically an entire season through suspension, I think, as well, which he threw that in, he'd be at 325 or something. So
that's the classic, you see. So he is this sweetheart, loves his family, and then really does enjoy running stupidly fast into other big blokes and getting away with
whatever
he can.
Standing over them.
I guess, Benny Teo, you know, you've played a lot of footy. That's, and you may well fit into the category yourself, to be honest. Nice bloke, white line fever. Have you played? Who's the best example of that? As somebody who, geez, a sweetheart, but once he gets into footy mode, no prisoners.
Yeah, look, I would have to say the nicest person I've ever met in football was Petro Sevenisiva.
Yes.
Like he's the most gentle man, caring guy. He's got time for everyone. But on the footy field, he didn't mind turning his hip into you and knocking you out. Like, so he was, you know, he was a tough player and he just carried the footy hard through the middle. So I'd have to say he's probably the guy off the field that I thought was
Hard to top that. But I'm going to go with probably Triple M's, and we all know him really well, Triple M's own Mark Geyer, I would say. Like when I first signed for Penrith, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to go up there and MG and, you know, early 90s, he was just like an absolute lunatic. And then I remember the first time I met him, I thought, oh, how's this going to go? And he was like, gave me a big cuddle and, you know, it was just that, he's just a beauty. We all just know what a beautiful man he is. So, MG was that guy for me.
Crusher Cleal mentioned a good one. He said Les Boyd.
Oh, really?
Les Boyd was a lunatic on the field,
was.
But he said off the field, gentlest, warmest guy you'd ever meet.
Where would we put Gordon Tallis in this?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a sweetheart now. I don't know when he was playing, whether he was the same off-field as he is now.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you got on the field, though,
yes,
terrifying.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Read about it. Read about it.
Reedy's Mail.
Yes, the first Reedy's mail for me for the year. A little bit overexcited about it. Penrith, and what about Paul Adamotti? Now, what's the kind of the backstory to this re-signing?
So last week they announced Isaac Tungo had re-signed the centre, who justified his pay packet of over $700,000 last night. They now re-signed Paul Alamotti, young guy they signed on a one-year deal from the Bulldogs at the end of the last season. He's I think he's 20 now, but he was one of those kids coming through that was going to be a superstar, played New South Wales under-19s. So they've now extended him for another year. Now what makes this interesting is the Taylan May, the other first starting centre there at the moment.
He was brilliant last week.
He was brilliant last week. He's off contract at the end of this year. The club started talking to him about a contract extension, but I'm sure Taylan May and his management sat back and watched Isaac Tungo re-sign and that massive amount of money and probably thinking, well, Taylan May's worth as much as him.
Left centre as well as right centre.
So that's where it's going to be problematic, I imagine, for Penrith to keep both those guys. Paul they now have an insurance policy if Taylan May goes in Paul Alamotti, who, as I said, huge things expected of him when he was at the Bulldogs. He played 19 games in first grade, but didn't really kick on. But I think there's hopes that Penrith...
They've just gone through this with Stephen Crichton.
Wasn't losing him in terms of, I know. But, I mean, you look at Tungo. I mean, we're talking 700,000 plus a year he got. Mm. I mean, Taylan May is in that class as well. And I don't know in the modern game if you can afford to be playing both your centres in excess of $700,000 a year. So that's the issue for the Panthers. But at least now with Paul Alamotti, they've got someone there who, if at the end of the year they need someone to step in for Taylan May, he's ready-made. He can do that, and he'll have had 1 year in the Penrith system. He'll have another year to grow into his body and sort of get a grasp of the game and what he needs to do. And, you know, he's there just in case Taylan May decides at the end of the year that he wants to go and pursue big dollars elsewhere.
700. I mean, the Dragons paying 800 grand for a winger at the moment in Zach Lomax. And if he plays like he did last week...
They mightn't be for much longer, though, Tom.
Oh, come on. If he plays like he did last week, it was brilliant. Worth was every brilliant. Cent. Yeah, Benny, too, you must have been, with your mob, you must have been working on ways to confront Zach Lomax on the wing.
Yeah, they've been dangerous, haven't they? And isn't Jack Bird's looking pretty good there in that centre spot. So it's hard to see Lomax getting back into that position. And Moses Suli, he's a handful. So yeah, he previewed a lot on the video sessions throughout the week. But they've been big, strong and impressive, the outside backs for the Dragons so
far. Benny, do you think there's much difference between Taylan May and Isaac Tungo? Do you think they're similar...
I think they're similar price range. I think when you got your money tied up in those main players, your spine players, your Clearys and that real core that they've won grand finals with, you know, you probably only got enough money to sign one of your centres, and then the other one's always going to be either a cheapie from another team, you know, or a young junior coming through. I don't think you're ever going to have the money to keep Taylan May and Tungo. And the other thing too, remember there was all the chat that Taylan May wanted to play with his brother and they all wanted to play at the same team. So Penrith probably have heard all the rumours and thought to themselves, well, let's get on the front foot. Let's lock up Tungo and then we'll deal with the May stuff after. But, you know, that's what happens sometimes when you put it out there that you'd be happy to leave just so you can play with your brother.
I will say, I think that idea has gone by the wayside a bit, Tone, because I expect Terrell May to stay at the Roosters and sign a contract extension to the Roosters. Now, they're not looking at Taylan May, as I understand it. So if they're going to play together, it won't be in the next 3 or 4 years, I'd imagine.
Okay. Talking big money, what's Dave Fifita doing at Gold Coast?
Dave's got that clause in his contract. It's a round 10 clause where he's got until round 10 to let the Titans know whether he's going to stay or leave at the end of the season. I'd expect Dave will stay. I know he's not playing football at the moment. He's sidelined. And he wanted some time to spend under Dez to decide whether the Titans was a club he wanted to be at. But my understanding is that once he gets back on the field, he'll inform the Titans he's staying. So expect Dave Fifita to commit to the Titans long term. He's on a big deal there, a lot of money. And he had the chance to go before he signed that deal, but he obviously put that clause in just to make sure he was comfortable with Dez and the regime under Dez. And my understanding is he's pretty comfortable there, Dave, and he will take up that contract.
You have heard Gordy Taylor say a few times, of course, he's connected to the club that Dave Fifita is happy there and will go beyond that.
I don't think he'll do it in a hurry, though. I reckon he might go right down to the round 10 deadline before he accepts it. Just to make things interesting.
Just keep them waiting. What about expansion? We're talking about New Zealand for a state of origin. What about the new team? Is it South Island? That's certainly there. Dave Moffat, of course, who used to run the NRL. He reckons it's the go.
Yeah, we had a story today with Dave Moffat, who was the former NRL CEO for a couple of years back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he started up a consortium in the Christchurch area. They've got a new stadium over there, fully enclosed stadium. There's two expansion bids over there, but both based out of Christchurch. Dave's got Andy Marinos involved, who was the CEO of Australian Rugby when they signed Joseph Swalehi. He's a former leaguey, played, I think he signed for Canterbury maybe during the Super League War and played one game, I think, from memory. So, look, they want a meeting with Peter Vlandis as soon as possible. Andy Marinos, I understand, has already reached out to Andrew Abdo and had a chat with him, but they want to sit down with Peter Vlandis and get an understanding of what the game wants in terms of expansion, when they're going to look at bringing in a new team or how many teams are going to look at bringing in. But Dave Moffat's very confident they'll put forward a pretty compelling bid. And I like the idea of another team in the South Island in New Zealand. We're all talking about PNG, and I think PNG will happen.
Really?
By mid-year, I expect they'll make an announcement there. But I think
that's a dud decision. There you go.
Okay.
I do.
Well, I think, there's many people that think it's a good idea, think it's a bad idea as well. But, I think Perth and the South Island, New Zealand, they're the other two areas I would think are logical for the game. When it goes, I think we'll go to 20 teams, and they're the other two areas I think they'll look at.
Benny T, you don't think we've exhausted the resources of Queensland yet, do you?
No, I still think eventually there could be another side here in Queensland and Brisbane. I think Brisbane is a big city that can handle, it's had one team for so long and now there's two, but I still think eventually it'll go to three. But I agree with you, Reedy. I think there's a real opportunity down there in Christchurch. There's a lot of really good rugby league players that come out of that area. If you think of guys like Jermaine Asako and Jordan Ricky, that they're from there. I know they're very strong in the rugby union, but I think it would be a great spot. And obviously Perth. Perth opens up a lot of possibilities in terms of games and when the games are played. Papua New Guinea, I'm not too sure, but if you got to do it, you got to do it.
You can say it, Dad.
The other thing about the South Island, New Zealand, is it opens up that origin like South v North. And I think the idea is they tap into the Pacific region, which I think is a really good idea because, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, a lot of good footballers come out of those areas. And we have a team that's got its tentacles in those areas a bit more directly than we do now. I think there's a real mine a resource you can mine in those areas.
Aaron Woods joins us. G'day, buddy. How are you, big man?
G'day, boys. How are we?
Very good. Look, there's a few things we have to get to with you. Just, your take on what's gone on so far. And I guess the story that today a lot of people are talking about is Latrell.
Yep.
Latrell Mitchell and that the post-game interview, which was fruity.
It was different, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The secret of being a player, an ex-player, and being in the media is to be as close to real as you can possibly be, yet knowing there is a lens through which you're operating. So he decided he was just going to go for it. Now, we heard Maroon was very disappointed and maybe a little bit harsh on him. What did you make of it?
Look, as a player, obviously when you first come off the field, that's probably the hardest time for me to do an interview because obviously the journos, they come to get us. They come to get an interview.
Yeah.
It's always good when you win, obviously, because you're on a high. The emotions, you're pretty, sometimes you might get a little bit expletive because you're so excited. When you lose, that's when I hate doing the interviews because it's sort of like you've got to sort of half bag yourself and bag your teams because they want to know what happened, where it went wrong. But I think the thing that went wrong from Latrell was just the swear words. You didn't need to, you don't need to be swearing. Look, obviously he's excited that he got 100 tries. But if that was me having that interview, there's no way I would have swore. And, I probably would have just spoke about my team's performance. I don't think I would have acknowledged that I got 100 tries. I don't know that feeling. Because
it's a long way away from it, yeah.
I think I'm only on about 12. But obviously it's not something that, it sort of gives people to think that, this guy's a big head. He's only worried about his own performance. The team's just been beaten and beaten convincingly. I would have just probably just spoke about our performance as a side and where I could have been better for the next week.
Yeah, because the swearing, I mean, let's be honest, there was some swearing in here before we just went on air a moment ago. Yeah, and there's
Brent,
always a microphone on somewhere where
Brent,
you don't expect
Brent Reed's shocking.
Reedy, just, I know. I've given him that advice. Just
Reedy
don't do it.
So much off air.
Thank you. And if you're in the studio, just imagine that the microphones are on at all times. That was the only advice I would give. What about the Rabbits and their performance? You aren't any concern, 0-2?
I think there's a little bit of concern there. You got to look who they're playing next few weeks. I think they've got, you know, who they've got next
Roosters.
Week.
Roosters
they've got,
week.
I think Roosters, then they've got the Bulldogs, and then they've got, I think, Penrith. So it's a tough draw. You need to get those wins early. We spoke about it at Manly. You need to get that win in the first week or two, because once you don't get those first two wins, it's not like you're thinking or you're looking at the ladder, but it just pops up everywhere, you know. And it's funny, like with the Tigers, they've had the bye round one, so they're not on that 0 points anymore. They've got the two next to their name, which sort of gives them a bit of leeway. Yep. So if you're still on zero and, you know, you're going to round three, it can become nervous, because when you become behind in a game or you lose another game, you go down by three, so you're 0-3, the people come out. And look at the moment, like Latrell has a poor interview and we're all on the back trying to hammer him.
Yeah.
Where they just look for the little things.
I just looked at the draw. Actually, they're Warriors, Sharks, Bye, Storm, Panthers.
That's a really tough run.
And Bulldogs are in there somewhere.
Yeah, Bulldogs, yeah.
But the other five games are horrific.
Yeah, it's a tough draw, and you need to get the wins early. You know, they probably would have looked at it and said, you know, we probably could beat Manly in Vegas. They had the opportunity. They're up 20-12, and they couldn't go on with it.
All right, what about Benji and that other story through the week? You know, the question about work ethic and is he turning up early enough? What sort of message is it sending to the team? He, of course, denied that and said he was there at 5 o'clock in the morning before the players arrived. He, you know, he chooses to use 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. as family time, which I think is absolutely perfectly fine.
See, I'm the opposite. I'd work as long as possible to get away from my family and kids. But, you know, everyone's different.
You took your boy to the footy last night.
Yeah, because that was part of work. So, and the missus was crook, so I had to get out of the house to get in the good books. But honestly, look, I've spoken to the boys. He gets in there early. He does take off early. But, you know, I've been coached by Ivan Cleary at Tigers. His biggest thing, he was out by 2 o'clock because he wanted to go pick his kids up from school.
Two o'clock.
And why aren't we saying anything about him? He's won 3 comps in a row. Yeah. Is it good because he's won 3 comps?
Well, tough on game day.
We didn't know until you told us.
That's what I'm saying. So that's the thing. A lot of the people don't understand. Not every coach is the same. Yeah. And Ivan's philosophy, he's so laid back, relaxed. He was completely different than any coach I had. Yeah. You know, Siebes is good. Siebes is so prepared. I think Siebes, I know he's first in and he's always there till like when the boys are go, but he does a lot of work from home. You know, he's got 3 daughters as well that he has to look after. Obviously his wife, his work ethic's high. And then I've had other blokes like Jason Taylor. I've had a lot of coaches in my time. Kim Sheen. Everyone's different.
So who are the guys? I've had quite a few.
You want to go through the list?
Well, who are the guys then in the coaching department who are clearly 24/7 obsessed?
Well, Tim Sheens. You know, every conversation you have with Tim, whether it's like, oh, yeah, Tim, I got married on the weekend, it'll end up back talking about rugby league. Seriously. Like
talking about a scrum play from the Raiders in 95.
Benny's been coached by him, mate. He's one of those guys. Flano was really good. Like, Flano worked his backside off. He's probably one of the coaches I worked with that's worked the longest I've ever seen. He built the gym at Cronulla, and he'd always be fixing up, but he had that really good balance. Like, he wouldn't overdo the coaching-wise, but he just did little things that would just, I don't know, they play with your mind where you don't want to let him down, and that's where he was really good at. Every coach is different. You know, Mao wasn't the best tactician I've had, but geez, you'd run through a brick wall for him. And Mao,
because of what he'd done, or because of his
it's their
ongoing personality
when they walk through the field. But the other thing you've got to give Benji a bit of, he hasn't even coached the game yet.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going off too early. Like, obviously, they got a tough one down in Canberra this week. What if they win? Yeah. Do we still talk about Benji as in it might be the new way to coach boys?
Yeah, indeed.
And all these other blokes and knuckleheads, they should be working too. They're working too much.
I've got a question.
Have you?
Are you going to put an invoice in? You're about 15 minutes late today. Speaking of blokes, who go home early? You've arrived late. What's
before
doing
you, before you blow your horn too early, Reedy, like you normally do, I've been told I was on from 3 to 5 today.
Okay. It's not what I heard, Woodsy.
Chigga White, really? Throughout the week, the main producer here.
Yeah. He said 3 to 5.
And I said, you sure you don't need me at 2? He goes, mate, 3.
Oh, are you here?
Yeah, well, look, we've got so many bodies
here. We were going fine without you.
Because I heard Reedy's mail and looked like you sound like you had a fit halfway through it. You couldn't get the words out.
Could possible. Yeah.
I had to fix my tune up in the car. Didn't work.
Well, look, he's bringing the thunder.
He's coming hot.
Speaking of coming in hot, I was sitting maybe in the Bondi Diggers Club watching the rugby league from Vegas. And my favourite thing is what images are going around the world. And it was just you and your budgie smugglers in the dressing room.
Oh, boys, I was living the dream over there.
Wandering around. You'd taken off it because you were, I guess, you know, in emergency.
So I was the professional backslapper over there. So I had to get the boys going. Mm-hmm. I knew what my role was, and I was happy with that too. I had to get the boys going early in the week in Vegas. Had to pump them up. Then had to get them switched on the train. They called me Paddy Mills over there. You know the bloke on the bench that waves the white towel?
That's you.
Yeah, mate, what happened? We got the win.
You did.
I'll tell you one thing, Bart.
Tell me.
We celebrated after the game, and one of the poorest performances I've seen is the man next to me.
Oh, what are you talking about?
He was awful.
What, with Ludacris?
Yeah.
Being the rapper?
He was the rapper. He did the after show, yeah.
Okay.
He was brilliant.
Was it the dancing that was a concern?
The dancing between Peabody and Buzz Rothfield.
Oh, my God.
Disgraceful.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to sleep for a week.
And then, you know what? They were like celebrities in there. Blokes were coming up getting photos with these two knuckleheads.
Not me. Buzz was. Most popular bloke.
Reedy was the one taking the photos.
Yeah. just quickly, Manly, huge clash tomorrow, yep. The Roosters.
Yeah, the boys are excited for this one. Look, the Roosters tend to start slow in the season, but what we saw in Vegas, they're outstanding. It's like Tedesco's got a point to prove. He's copped a lot of flack in the back end of last year and the off-season going to this year. So we're going to be on high alert for James. I think he's up for a huge year. And then, mate, they lose Spencer Lenu, but they welcome back Jared Waerea-Hargreaves. He's their main man in the middle.
Yep.
You know, players lift around him. So it's going to be a huge task, but it's sold out, you know, at Four Points Park. So it's going to be an exciting time. I think Reedy's going to go there too.
Yeah. I'm sidelined, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't get a ticket for love or money. I tried to get a few freebies home and I couldn't get any.
Can you get to the tickets to the Blacktown game? Because isn't that what you're playing?
No one loves you or likes you, Reedy. That's why we won't get one.
You missed that sledge?
Oh, I missed it.
can you get tickets to the Blacktown game?
I've got six tickets. Reedy, you want one of mine?
Can I have one?
No.
This is the Saturday scrum. Ben, Tio, Benny, brilliant work once again. Can I, before you go, just one question. Obviously, you're a man who, dual code, played rugby as well. Are you concerned, should rugby league just leave off the Wallabies? They're going poor enough as it is, or should we completely decimate them? There's the idea that the Roosters look at, you know, a Max Jorgensen or Pattaya, I think it is, the Dragons, you know, want to recruit as a centre or a winger. Do you wish to just leave them alone or not?
No, just take them. Decimate them, mate. Just if there's any athletes over there, go get them. And in turn, you know, Australian rugby's going to have to up their game and figure out ways to be creative because they need to, because there's only limited athletes over here and we should be a lot better at rugby than we are in the world rankings.
Ben Teo, always great to talk to you. Go well.
Yeah, up the Tigers.
Time for this.
Believe it or not.
Start with a very serious one question. This is all off the back, obviously, of the Spencer Lenu. He got 8 weeks. There was so much talk before the judiciary made that decision about what the length of that punishment, what was appropriate. Now, that was talk in the media, and it was, of course, talk with Latrell Mitchell and other players, and there was a criticism that those players should not be saying anything because it might influence or unduly influence the judiciary process. But, believe it or not, if the media, Brent Reed, is allowed to weigh in on the severity of a punishment such as that, players should also be allowed.
No, I don't believe it, Tony. Don't believe it. Well, because players, I'm trying to think of an equitable situation. I can't think of one off the top of my head because I had no notice. But
what do you mean you had no notice? when you arrived, you were handed a rundown. On that rundown, the question was sitting right there.
As the great Maroon would say, prepare to foul.
Yeah, it was on page 3. I don't like to look ahead, Tone.
Oh, you're used to page 1 kind of guy.
Yeah. No, but the players carry, when a guy like Latrell Mitchell says something public, I think it carries more weight than
you,
a gibber like me. Don't you?
I'm listening to Latrell, not Peabody.
Yeah. If Latrell says it goes in the back page, if I say it, it just goes on page 3 pages.
It doesn't matter what page it is. It's there. It is. It's in the public.
It gets more prominence, more significance.
Okay.
Carries a bit more weight with the general public, maybe.
Okay, somebody's allowed to write a column.
I don't want to sell myself short.
No, of course.
Because, you know, maybe a lot of people listen to what I say.
Does that mean, you never read your own articles because you're always on page 3 and never page 1?
No, I'm just saying, sorry, if mate, it's on the screaming back page, it probably carries a little bit more
No, I was going to your reference before when you said of the run sheet, you only read the first page.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Gertz, believe it or not, if the media is allowed to weigh in on the severity of a punishment, players should also be allowed to.
I believe it, Tane. I think that was a bit of a unique situation, and if players feel passionate about a certain cause, sometimes I think it's okay for those guys to have a voice to share their opinion, but. In relation to that, I mean, the game just needs to make sure that it's got the right people in places that they're not influenced by that sort of stuff, you know. Like, I mean, don't worry about the general public. Don't worry about what the players think. Get the right people in the room to make a decision that best suits the outcome of the whole situation.
I don't think they were influenced, Tone.
No,
Jeff Bellew is obviously a really experienced, smart guy. I just thought of something.
Are you changing your mind now?
I'm not employed by the NRL. They don't pay my wages. So they have no control over what I do, but they do have control over players.
Oh, damn, that's a good
argument.
So they
can't, yeah. So there is a difference there.
Okay.
I believe it.
Yep.
I've spoke about it and I'm still playing.
Exactly. See, he wouldn't have been allowed to say, under your rule, under your iron fist.
It's not my rule. The NRL's got a rule in place.
Okay. It's page 3's rule.
You should be fined, Woods. I'm going to ring Abdo.
Well, he's listening. It's okay. Believe
we're
it or not.
Woods in Vegas, mate.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay, yeah.
Believe it or not, Matt Burton's best position is in the centres. Woodsy?
I personally believe that. Like, you know, he got centre of the year at Penrith, won the competition. Ball playing doesn't come natural for him. I think he's one of the best hole runners as a centre. He's one of those guys that can sort of change his angle on the pass. And then we noticed last night he took the line on a lot more. He's so much more dangerous when he runs. But also, I think for Bulldogs, he sort of has to play 5-8. Who else is going to put in that position and play 5-8? But I think his best position is centre.
Ryan?
I think we'll see, Tony, as the Bulldogs, you know, start to find their rhythm and they play with a little bit more momentum through the middle, that he will run as a 5-8. He just needs – playing centre in the Bulldogs or playing 5-8 at the Bulldogs when they've got no momentum through the middle, they're not going forward, is going to be difficult. You're not going to have many opportunities to run. So I think that the opportunity is going to be there for him to run as they develop into a footy side, and I think 5-8's his best spot.
I'm with Woodsy. I think his best position is probably centre, but I think at the Bulldogs, the best position for him to play there is 5-8.
Okay. Just going back on that, Woodsy, because we discussed it before, yep. Are you as optimistic after what you've seen about the Bulldogs as Reedy is?
No.
I just said they'd be better.
Oh, no, I watched them last 2 weeks, and I think they threw a lot at the Sharks last night. Yep. And, you know, we got to commentate with Joshy Reynolds, and he goes, you know, they had a crack tonight. They were good in attack, but they still only come up with one try.
Yeah.
Like that's
as the Grub said it, we had a crack tonight.
Yes.
He can't rid himself yet.
He loves it. He loves it, the big boy. He's just a passionate Bulldogs fan.
Yeah. All right. This is one for passionate Manly fans, like your good self now. Only, believe it or not, only with, and this is a question that happens every year, only with Tom Trbojevic, Manly are a top 4 team, Ryan Girdler.
I don't believe they're a top 4 team regardless. Sorry, Woodsy. They don't play you enough, mate. As soon as they start giving you a chance, mate, I might change that.
I appreciate that, Gertz. So should Aaron Woods be in there.
I've got Manly sort of scrambling in the bottom of the 8, and that's with Tom. So I think without Tom, I don't even think they make the 8 this year. There's too many good sides out there.
But were you not impressed with what happened around, only, you know, one game? But their first game wasn't.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah, I thought they did. I thought they did really well. But you know, I just think that there's parts of their game that over the last couple of years, in certain situations, kind of like the Sharks, you know, they fall away a little bit too easily. So it'll be good to see whether they've changed their attitude and they're a bit more resilient, like the Sharks have. And then, you know, maybe that changes. But at the moment, yeah, if Tommy plays, I think they scratch into the 8. But I don't have him in the top 4 now.
I believe this. Yeah, I reckon with Tommy there, if he plays 24 games, I think they're potentially a top 4 team. But without him, I don't think they're a top 4 team. No, so I believe it. Yeah,
I don't believe it.
Of course, no.
Honestly, last year we got to see Tolu Kola go back to fullback.
He was good.
We were probably a little bit too late where we put him back there. Yep. He showed a lot of good signs. But for me, I think if you take out Lachlan Croker in our team, I think that's when we would be out of the top 4. I think he's the glue in our spine.
Are the Turbo brothers happy that the 3 of them are running around at the moment?
Yeah, they're excited. They're a good bunch of boys, mate. Honestly, I haven't met a family like just they're so nice. Like they cook our barbecues on you know Captain's Run days. Like
really,
they just do so many little things for that side that it goes unnoticed by by the fans and that, but us players, mate, we love playing with them. Like, they're just, they're like Croker is on the field, the glue. They're like the glue off the field. They're
good such, man, Jakey. Yeah,
the whole family, man. The whole family.
Love him.
Jake hates you, so I don't know why he's saying
that. That's your Believe It or Not for this week on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.